thanks for joining us on Chicago Tonight. I'm Brandis Friedman. Here's what we're looking at. Illinois officials testify on Capitol Hill, marking the fifth anniversary of the January 6th insurrection.
Yet again, we have now entered into a war where there is no known off-ramp.
Plus, concerns and praise over the Trump administration's actions in Venezuela. What it means for U.S. politics, drug trafficking, the oil industry, and Venezuelans. First off tonight, the Trump administration says it's freezing $10 billion in funds for social services and childcare in five Democratic-led states, including Illinois. The Department of Health and Human Services says it's withholding funding from the Child Care Development Block Grant, which subsidizes daycare for low-income households, and the Temporary Assistance for Needy Family Funds, which provides cash assistance and job training to low-income parents. The administration claims those states and their governors have been complicit in allowing massive amounts of fraud to occur and that they're, quote, pouring money out to people in the U.S. illegally. In a statement, the Illinois Department of Human Services, which administers those funds in the state, says, quote, IDHS has not received any official communication or notification on impacts to federal funding. This is yet another politically motivated action by the Trump administration that confuses families and leaves states with more questions than answers. IDHS will provide an update if it is made aware of program or funding changes. To mark the fifth anniversary of the insurrection at the U.S. Capitol, members of the former January 6th Select Committee held an unofficial hearing on the Hill. Testimony included several elected officials from Illinois.
And I also get asked a lot, what did the January 6th committee accomplish? And I'll tell you, we may have another few years. We have to continue to battle this misinformation. But I guarantee you that my kid and my grandkid and his grandkid will know the truth of what happened on that day.
Kids got picked on in school.
Illinois Attorney General Kwame Raoul also testified about the state's lawsuit against the Trump administration for its efforts to deploy the National Guard to Chicago. Today's hearing stood in contrast to President Trump, who held no official commemorations for the anniversary today. But some of those pardoned by the president marched the same path they took to the U.S. Capitol 5 years ago to remember the rioters who lost their lives during the attack. More than 50 Illinoisans were among those pardoned by the president. Protesters gathered outside the headquarters of People's Gas today, calling out the utility company's push for a $202 million rate increase. The rate hike would raise monthly bills by an estimated $10 to $11.
We're confident that they can run a program that costs less while actually prioritizing safety and facilitates a transition to safer and cleaner energy to heat our homes.
And this is going to be really hard on consumers. Our message to People's Gas is stop treating your customers like an ATM.
People's Gas says replacing more than 1,000 miles of the city's underground pipes was a directive from the Illinois Commerce Commission and maintains that the work is, quote, critical for the sake of ongoing safety and a liability in Chicago's heating system. Looking for a job? The Obama Presidential Center says it's hiring.
We need people who will keep this place safe and welcoming as security officers, who will make it shine as custodians, and who will greet visitors from around the world as visitor associates, our ambassadors of hope. Because when people come here, we want them to feel what makes the South Side so special.
The former president himself making the open call for job applicants in this video. The foundation says it's partnering with four community-based organizations that prioritize hiring local residents for 150 new full-time positions early this year. New employees would start working late this winter. Up next, local reaction to the U.S. intervention in Venezuela right after this.
Chicago Tonight is made possible in part by the Alexandra and John Nichols family, the Polk Brothers Foundation, and the support of these donors.
Venezuelans in Chicago are reacting to the latest in their home country. their now former president here in the U.S. to face narco-terrorism charges. But the outcome of that capture by U.S. forces over the weekend is far more complicated. His vice president, Delcy Rodriguez, has been sworn in as the new interim president. Venezuelans and others are wondering about both the Trump administration's motives for the capture and the ripple effect it may have across the region and the globe. Joining us are Robert Pape, a political science professor at the University of Chicago, terrorism specialist, and the founding director of the Chicago Project on Security and Threats. Richard Porter, attorney, longtime member of the Republican National Committee, and former White House advisor to President George H.W. Bush and Vice President Dan Quayle. And on Zoom, we have Anna Gil Garcia, founder of the Illinois-Venezuelan Alliance, and Lena Brito, a professor of Latin American history at Northwestern University. Thanks to all of you for joining us. Anna Gil Garcia, I want to start with you because this started for you with 2 a.m. phone calls Saturday from your family. What did they tell you?
Well, I'm going to have to admit that, you know, by 2 o'clock in the morning, I got this phone call from my family in Venezuela. And they were very content. They were really, you know, they didn't know exactly what really that meant. But they say, you know, it's happening. And I say, what is happening? I say, well, I think that he has taken Maduro out of the country. And that was a good feeling at that moment. Because, you know, we've been waiting for 27 years just to see not only Maduro removed, you know, from the country, but also, you know, the entire regime.
What was your initial reaction to hearing all of this? You know, you said that, you know, it was a good feeling that he was finally moved. But you said the entire regime, which some of it is still in charge.
Exactly. And when I said the entire regime is because, you know, we were expecting that once Maduro was removed, we were waiting for more. We were waiting for, you know, Delcy Rodriguez. We were waiting for her brother, Jorge Rodriguez. We were waiting, you know, for the main players that destroyed the country in 27 years. But that didn't happen. So, you know, we needed to wait for more. And I think it's in that moment, I believe it was too soon for us to make any assumptions or the decisions in terms, you know, what was going to happen next.
So that said, you know, with some members of the Maduro regime still in charge, many Venezuelans, you know, as you've said, you know, are celebrating what's happening, but some have also taken to the streets in protest over what the U.S. has done. Are you concerned, Anna, about what comes next for Venezuela and, you know, your family, your people at home?
Yes, we are. Actually, we know that the regime is still in power. You know, the regime is controlling more than 150,000 armed paramilitaries in the country. Just yesterday, last night, those paramilitaries, the colectivos, they were patrolling, you know, the whole city of Chicago, of Caracas, and they are armed. They are in charge. They are in charge of the security of the country. They are in charge of the food distribution, you know, the citizen safety, patrolling the streets, you know, just doing all the things. I don't think that the Venezuelan right now, the Venezuelans in Venezuela, they believe that any changes has happened, except because Maduro is not in there. But, you know, just thinking about that, Delcy Rodriguez, who is one of the architects of the destruction of the country, is the president interim is something that really we need to think about, and it's very hard to swallow.
Okay. Lena Brito, I want to get you in here because the U.S., you know, part of the justification for this from the United States is the war on drugs. Is that the biggest reason for this attack, or do you think, you know, the control of Venezuelan oil is the true reason?
Well, I think the Trump regime or the Trump administration has been very open about their true intentions and the true colors of this whole intervention in their press conferences, in the indictment against Maduro and his wife, and in every other statement that Secretary of State Marco Rubio has been doing in the last few days. And I think at this point, it's very clear that the war on drugs rocks was kind of like a facade or an initial step number one justification for something larger. So definitely has to do with oil, but it also has to do with geopolitics. It has to do with the alliance that the Maduro regime had with Russia and China and Iran, and how under the new national security doctrine, what has come to be known as the Trump corollary, that type of presence in the Americas, in the Western Hemisphere, is not going to be tolerated. So it's oil, it's a strategic resource as oil, but it's also about control of the whole hemisphere and Trump resuscitating a doctrine that actually was created in the 19th century, in the early 20th century, for very under a very different context. So we'll see how it plays out now in the 21st century with our technology and with our challenges.
Lena, you mentioned, of course, you know, Russia, China, Iran, but what about even more regionally? And, you know, as you mentioned, Trump's attempt to sort of like police the Western Hemisphere, what could the ripple effects be across the region and in the rest of the Western Hemisphere?
Well, if you look at the media, mainstream media, alternative media, social media in Latin America, in Spanish right now, the countries in South America are terribly divided, polarized, and concerned about what's happening because they are receiving this aggression, this intervention in Venezuela as a message to the whole region. So we know that The administrations of the governments in the southern cone, particularly in Argentina and Chile, are allies of the Trump administration. The current government in Argentina under President Milei and the coming government in Chile under elected President Kast are fully allies of the Trump administration. So now it seems that the Trump administration is aiming for the northern half of South America, which is Venezuela and Colombia, and the strategy there is very different. If we read the National Security Report that they released in November, we understand where they're coming from. The strategy for the Americas is enlist and expand. Anybody can download that document from internet for free. And enlist and expand is what they're doing right now, enlisting and bringing closer their allies and their friends and expanding their power to other countries that are opposed or hostile to the Trump administration.
Robert Pape, you've made some predictions about Maduro's capture of Venezuela, or Maduro's capture and what it means for Venezuela. You've said that there could be civil war.
Well, not quite civil
not
war,
quite
chaos.
Not quite civil war. Chaos. Okay, okay. Thank you. What do you see as the likely outcome here?
This, first of all, is about oil. Almost 100% about oil. Maduro wouldn't make the deal that Trump wanted on oil. That's why they seized him. This isn't just executing a warrant. The oil is also what's underneath the issue with China. China buys Venezuela's oil. So it all comes back to oil. And what Trump said from Saturday morning and on Air Force One and continues to say is this is about oil. He wants control here. And what does control ultimately mean? Not protecting the oil and giving the oil to the people of Venezuela. That's why he doesn't want the Nobel Peace Prize winner to run. He wants control of the profits of that oil. That is a big problem for stability in Venezuela. The reason that's a problem is because this regime is essentially a mafioso criminal style regime, and we took off the top leader, we decapitated it, but it runs on money. It runs on holding business interests together, paying off the military. This is not an ideologically unified regime. And so you take a big hunk of that money now that was going to the military, going to the intelligence, going to pro-government militias, and you take half or 90% of that and you give that to Donald Trump to do out of the country, give it to the oil barons, give it to the oil companies. Who's going to pay the price? The regime. And what are they going to do? They're going to be mad. They're doing this for a paycheck, and they're going to be extremely angry, and they're going to start to fight among themselves. Making a real deal that's going to stick, where you're going to hand off 50 to 90% of the profits to the White House, This is a prescription for chaos.
In 2024, there was an election that followed economic sanctions. Global pressure began to remove Maduro. Was U.S. intervention the only option?
No. This is we have been dealing with instability, different problems, different regimes for decades in Latin America, South America. When we use heavy-handed force, when we orchestrate, as the CIA has done, regime changes, when we seize, topple the top leaders, what we end up doing is injecting anti-Americanism into the problem. Here, Donald Trump has even made it worse, because it's not just anti-Americanism now, it's not just the usual problem, it's the money has got to come through the White House. And that's what Donald Trump is being very, very clear about. He wants control of the financial flow, and that is the big deal, and that's what's going to be hard to hold that government together, and it's why there are 10,000 Marines on those ships. This isn't just naval and air power, because those Marines may need to go in and start actually controlling on the ground those oil fields, which will create chaos in other ways. This is primed for resistance and chaos.
Now, Richard Porter, I know you've got thoughts, and I know you've got things to say, because I can see it on your face, because you have praised President Trump's actions in Venezuela, citing that this will help lessen the influence of Russia and China in the region, in addition to escalating the war on drugs.
Yeah, this is great. I mean, the president ran on the scourge, stopping the scourge of drugs in this country, and for the first time in our lifetimes, the war on drugs is no longer a metaphor. It's a real thing. And so what you see is he's gone to the source of drugs here with his action in Venezuela. But in addition to that, he stopped the border flow. The interdiction is much higher now. And plus, the ICE raids is reducing the distribution network within the city. So if you look at across the board, this is a full court press on the drug gangs. And it's very successful. That's one of the reasons why crime is down so much in the American cities in the last year. So this is like an unalloyed great thing that Donald Trump did. And I think that people are looking for clouds where there are none. This is a fabulous result. The arithmetic is different. If you're that vice president, she's now thinking through it. She knows the president isn't bluffing. So the phone call she has with Marco Rubio have a totally different tone. When Marco says, hey, I want you to do A, B, and C, or else, the or else means something. Okay, and what they want to do is transition this. They recognize there's a lot of force on the ground. Those motorcycle gangs are bad news. Okay, but you're not going to go in and have the Marines fight it. We want to have them start dismantling it from within. And the reality is the oil is an important part of the strategic importance of Venezuela. That's why Russia and China were there. Plus, there's uranium and gold. That's why Iran was there. So Hezbollah was there. This was a rat's nest of the bad people of the world, all of whom are using this as a base to try to make things worse for the United States of America.
So you mentioned interim president Delcy Rodriguez. Trump has given her a list of demands, including cracking down on the drug trade, removing Iranian and Cuban operatives from the country, and stopping the sale of oil to countries that oppose the U.S. But later today, she has also said that Venezuelans are running the country, counterpointing the president saying the U.S. will run Venezuela. How can the U.S. ensure stability in Venezuela without having to send in, what is it, the 10,000 military members,
right,
who were stationed near the
nation? They wouldn't have
them
there if they weren't poised to go in.
I think the real question is what ultimately happens with security, the services in Venezuela and the military? And do the leadership start recognizing that the way that they're going to be able to spend the money they stole from Venezuela is to stay alive? And to stay alive, they got to work with the United States. They don't want to be in jail. And so they're going to have to migrate this thing towards a situation where, again, the Venezuelans really are in control. Because right now, Cuba's been in control. And you have China there and Russia and the Iranians. You can imagine the situation that this pretender is in at this point, because she has Cubans sitting in the room with her when she's talking to Marco Rubio, and they're all armed. So she's between a rock and a hard place. And Trump is going to make it really hard for her, and she's going to have to turn against those guys or pay the price herself.
Anna, 80 casualties reported, including 32 Cuban nationals and at least 40 identified Venezuelan nationals, some of whom were civilians. There's also, of course, been damage to the infrastructure in Caracas. A lot of this has been difficult for journalists to confirm, because journalists are not allowed into the country from outside of the country. How might the people of Venezuela recover?
Well, you know, the news that are coming out of Venezuela, they are very limited. because I think that we have more information from outside than inside. Our families, they ask us always, you know, what is going on, and let us know, because we can't really reach the TV station here, or, you know, really there is a filter of the information that happened inside the country. We know that, of course, any type of intervention, like this military intervention that happened, casualties were going to happen. Particularly, you know, we were very concerned about civilians that were targeted, but we don't know how many they are to this point. We don't know really what is the damage that has been done to the army facilities in the country and both the airports.
Anna, if the Trump administration should point to this move and whatever happens after as, you know, look, we've stabilized Venezuela, those of you who are in the U.S. now seeking asylum are safe to go home, what does all of this mean for Venezuelans who are currently in the U.S. and hoping to stay here or hoping to receive asylum here?
You know, we are really having an issue with that right now, and I think it's very problematic to think about that because what is the removal of Maduro, you know, the situation in Venezuela is stable. It's just very far from that right now. I think that it has to be more protection to people who are already here in the country, and just wait. I think it's too premature to be sending back, like, you know, the Homeland Security has already indicated yesterday that, you know, Venezuela is a free country right now, and because Maduro has been removed, you know, now people can go and be happy there. I think that really is very inappropriate to say at this point, because we don't have a stable country right now. And I believe that people will be in danger if they plan to go back or if they are forced to go back.
Robert Pape, does the capture of President Maduro, does this violate international law?
Well, let me directly talk about the idea that we're just going to keep killing leaders until we get them to. So this called leadership decapitation, it's the subject of my book, Bombing to Win. So I am we have studied this for decades. I spent 3 years teaching for the U.S. Air Force all about leadership decapitation. I'm extremely familiar with these missions. The fact of the matter is, for decades, we have seen killing of leaders, say Russia killing Dudayev with our help, that's a Chechen leader, Israel killing Hezbollah leaders or Hamas leaders, or the United States capturing Saddam Hussein, or the death of Gaddafi. Over and over and over, we've done leadership decapitation, always with the threat, you know what, we're going to kill the next one if they don't obey. They don't obey. And there's a reason for that. It's because if Rodriguez or whoever it is gives us what Trump wants, say 50 to 90% of that money, she'll be killed by her own people, the people right next to her, her bodyguards. The problem here is, yes, we can threaten a B-2 with her name on it, but there are pistols pointed right at her head, and all she has to do is not come up with the money for the next payment, just like in the mob movies. This is very, very dangerous. Let's hope she's alive in 2 weeks, much less 2 years.
Tough place for her to be. Richard, same question to you, and then I want to give Lena Brito the last word. Go ahead.
Well, look, I think the whole point here is to change the way people are thinking about their future. And I think that the raid has successfully done that. And I think what they want to get people focused on is to recreate a constitutional democracy, where the rule of law instead of the rule of these gangs is where we're going to end up. It's not going to happen overnight. There's got to be a transition period. There is a massive opposition. A lot of it is outside the country. The failed socialist programs of the left in Venezuela drove 8 million people out of that country. So this is kind of a multifaceted good thing. We're addressing the root causes of a migration crisis. We're addressing the drug wars. We're pushing bad people out of our hemisphere, Russia, China, Iran. So I think all the way around, this is going to turn out to be a good thing over the course of time.
Lena Brito, we've got about 45 seconds. What is next? Is this going to bring about a democratic Venezuela?
Well, I don't really know what is next, because this is a very sui generis and unprecedented situation. So everything that is going to be unfolding is going to be new. But what we do learn from history is that every time the United States federal government adventure on something like this in the hemisphere ends poorly, ends badly, ends in violence and instability. So if you ask me personally, I'm very pessimistic about the whole situation. And then if you ask me as a historian, I think the historical lessons are very clear, and I cannot really recall one case where this type of interventions on the part of the United States had ended well.
So we know this part of history is written, the rest of it still to come.
Well, I'd say, though, Noriega is the closest example, and that worked out just fine.
All right, we're going to have to leave it there until the next time. I know you do disagree, Lena Brito at Northwestern. We're going to have to leave it there. I know you disagree. Robert Pape, Lena Brito, Ana Gil Garcia, Richard Porter, thanks to you all for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And we're back to wrap things up right after this.
Reflecting the people and perspectives that make up our communities. This story is part of Chicago Tonight, Latino Voices.
And that's our show for this Tuesday night. Join us tomorrow night at 5:30 and 10. Now, for all of us here at Chicago Tonight, I'm Brandis Friedman. Thank you for watching. Stay healthy and safe, and have a good night.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a Chicago personal injury and wrongful death firm, righting the heaviest wrongs for more than 40 years.